a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
We also have Ed Fang from the Power Rank.
Morning.
How are you today?
I'm good.
And on the phone, we have Craig Ross. Craig, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. It's beautiful here. It's dark, but beautiful.
No ICBMs?
You know, ordinarily, I take this opportunity just to jump right into Craig's point about fatigue not being a thing in college basketball. Yeah. We'll get there, Craig. But we're going to do something that we've never done on the roundtable before and talk a little bit of gymnastics. Can you, it's, you know, the discussion is warranted in light of, in light of what has been, you know, one of the worst
scandals
we've ever seen.
It's the worst. He's the worst sexual criminal in United States history. So,
well, I mean, there's a Jerry Sandusky guy too.
I mean, just in terms of the sheer number
of victims.
Like, it's unprecedented in the history of the country and probably the world. So, you know, and the thing is, I could wonder if they would have gotten away with it if the judge hadn't allowed 3 days of victim statements. Each one of them.
More than that.
It turned into 5.5. There were three on the sixth day. It was 5 full days.
Yeah, over 140. Over 140
statements. This came out 2 or 3 years ago. Like, people. There was like Hollander. Hollander.
She was the very first.
Yeah, I thought that was like a year and a half ago.
I mean, it's been 2 years.
The Indy Star article was in 2016, I think.
Yeah, so it's been a couple years. And these people at Michigan State didn't get enough scrutiny. They didn't get the kind of heat that they suddenly got as soon as this judge allowed everyone to say their piece in a courtroom. And we now. Anna Simon's gone because she, but not like she gets it still. That's still the worst statement I've ever seen.
Oh, God. Oh. And just the egregious lack of perspective.
And every single person on that Michigan State board is either not going to run for election or is going to get booted. I'm going to do my best to make sure that happens. Probably won't be a trustee myself, but if you are a Michigan State alum with a shred of dignity, let me know and I'll promote your trustee campaign. But just resignation is not enough for Anna Lou Simon. She needs to go to jail.
See, but unless they can find some evidence of cover up.
I mean, it doesn't have to be a cover up. You have to report. And she said they brought it to me. She told reporters this. I told them to play it straight, and I did not see a copy of the report. That is negligence that should be criminal.
Well, was there actually a report produced?
I don't know.
I think they said there wasn't actually a report produced.
I mean,
that makes it worse, doesn't it, Brian?
It does. Like, maybe she'll skate because we don't have the same rules that Pennsylvania does.
They showed wasn't part of that. They showed there was a cover up there
They got hit, I think, with mandatory reporting rules where, you know, the press and the university got this and they didn't move it along to whoever was, you know, the criminal.
Yeah. You know, it's why some of the coaches are able to skate, which is like, you know, how often do we hear coaches say they're teachers? And then all of a sudden when these mandatory reporting rules apply, well, you aren't really a teacher.
So the guys lower down the chain did have a case that they ran it up the chain. Like McQueary talked to somebody about it, and then it became – the hot potato was now there, and then it kind of rested with the guys.
I'm talking about here with Michigan State. That was one of the things that was being forwarded. Well, you know, can they really be – because some of these coaches or trainers really be – prosecuted for failure to report when they are technically aren't teachers.
Gymnastics coach should be.
Yeah, I would assume so. I mean, the fact that none of these people have been fired boggles the mind. So they allowed the gymnastics coach to retire and collect a pension. Simon retired. And so they're still keeping each other's backs, even though someone needs to step in. I mean, like the attorney general is going to run for the governor spot. He can't be the governor because this happened 2 years ago. It came out and he's only thinking about investigating Michigan State now. You can't be the governor. I mean, just straight up. I don't know what the guy's name is. Bill Schuette?
I don't know how to pronounce it.
He can't be the governor. Like, there's so many people involved in this have been so incredibly negligent. And I'm still out for blood. Like, I'm not talking about this from a Michigan State perspective. You know, I was really upset when the Brennan Gibbons stuff went down in Michigan. And that was just trying to dress up, the university taking what seemed like an appropriate action. So he gets expelled. And, Hoke lies about it. Brandon lies about it. And that was a firing offense to me for both those guys. Didn't happen. But the amount of pressure I think they got at Michigan for that action, I think, was appropriate. And I don't think we're seeing anything like that at Michigan State for the gravity of what went down there.
I guess for me, it's about the accountability you speak of. It is about eliminating the environment that allowed him to become a prolific predator. I mean, the guy was going to be a predator, anyway, right? He has that predilection clearly. So he was, he was going to be, a deviant. But how was he able to become this much of a deviant? Well, you had an enabling atmosphere there. And for when you look at her statement, when you hear them use terms like lone wolf and on an island, it obscures the point that they need to see. And that is the environment is the key. What are you going to do to make sure the safeguards are in place, the oversight is in place, so you don't have the opportunity for something like this to happen again? Will there be someone as I keep using the word prolific as him? No, probably not. But I mean, there are so many opportunities for people to commit abuse that if you don't pay attention to it now, then you could be dealing with another issue, even if it's not as serious somewhere down the line.
Well, I don't want to bring football into this because it gets rivalry-ish, but this is. Just last year, Michigan State had, four guys either arrested or leave the team because of sexual assault. And the way that Michigan State approached Austin Robinson, where it's like, okay, you had these two incidents in high school that should probably disqualify you from going to a Big Ten school. We don't care. We're going to bring you in. And the way that – I mean, I don't think that this is the only thing that's happened in East Lansing for the past 20 years. I think if you keep poking around, you're going to find that this was widespread. And if they're protecting a gymnastics doctor, they're probably protecting a bunch of other people. And that is the only thing that makes sense given the behavior of the people involved here. From Ferguson to Simon to the entire board, is if there are more skeletons in the closet that they are afraid are going to come out.
Or they're just indifferent.
Or they're idiots.
Yeah. Are they mutually exclusive?
No.
You can be both. I certainly assign that to some of the people here. But I think that there is a dangerous and callous indifference that is on display, a lack of perspective that is on display. And I don't know what happens to some people in positions of authority. I don't know if it's affluence, if it's your position, but some folks lose that eye level rapport that you have, that you need to have with the people that you're leading. And they become numbers or abstract. And that's why I think they needed to be in the courtroom. You needed to watch those and listen to those victim impact statements, because then maybe it's harder for you to say, make it sound like pacifying victims with money is something that you can accomplish, that that this predator, that all the fault lies with him. These things only make sense. They're only tenable if you are viewing the victims as abstract. If you don't have that eye level rapport, that's why they needed to hear. Maybe it would have made a difference. Hell, I mean, we still saw Simon's statement last night, right? So maybe it wouldn't have made a difference, but I can have some hope that it would have. they had been there. So I don't know, Craig. Certainly want to give you an opportunity.
Yeah. I have a few comments. I mean, one is that I saw a lot of Michigan State alums, and I think Judge Aquilina, who was pretty terrific in handling it the way she did, is an MSU alum. And I'm pretty sure that's true. And I think a lot of Michigan State folks really saw what was going on and made appropriate expressions. And, I mean, this guy could have landed anywhere, Penn State, Michigan, anywhere, but he happened to land at MSU. The thing that's upsetting is how the institution of MSU handled it from top to bottom. Brian, on his site yesterday or the day before, had an interview with Tim Stout and Joel Ferguson, and it was stunning.
It was horrible.
And
horrific.
It was horrific. He minimized it. He mentioned that the NCAA wouldn't be much interested because, after all, it's just women's gymnastics. D'Antonio's comments were gutless and pathetic.
What did D'Antonio say?
He just brushed it off.
Yeah. And then you had Izzo's comments were jaw-dropping. His comment was, "I hope they got the right guy," which was just impossible to believe. What the hell? I've said some bad things about Tom Izzo, but I've never said he was stupid. Well, I guess I was wrong. The comments by Simon yesterday were just beyond belief. Her comments were essentially, "I'm the victim here," and that this is a political issue, and that Team MSU, those were her words, Team MSU needed to circle the wagons, and it was more important for Team MSU to circle the wagons than it was to protect their students and their athletes. It was a stunning misunderstanding of what her job and role is. Personally, I think that Ferguson should resign yesterday. Probably their whole board of trustees should resign. And Simon only got forced out because I think the legislature was taking action. And of course, Hollis needs to go too. That would just be the beginning of some healing that's necessary.
Well, her statement, you just nailed it, I think, Craig, when you talk about her statement, it really reflects the depth of the issue there. Here she is on her way out. She's on her way out. She's not going to be president anymore. And even in that moment,
right,
you can't acknowledge, you can't display any accountability at all. You imply that you're only stepping down because, you know, in the time of crisis, people point at the leader. And so that's what's happening here. So I have to leave. I mean, are you kidding me?
And like, that's what should happen. If you have a sexual predator at your university for 20 years that you can't catch, and you're the president, you don't get to stay. There's a presumption of guilt there that applies to you because you screwed up so badly that this happened.
And that's what you need to say.
Right.
That's what you need to say. There was a failure of leadership here.
Well, Anna Lou Simon doesn't think she did anything wrong.
Clearly.
No, she thinks she's a political victim. Look at her statement, that she's just a victim of circumstances and the politics of this have led to her having to being forced out of her position.
And so now there's an opportunity to set the appropriate tone. And there are a lot of Michigan State folks that have been blowing the horn of, for accountability. And this gets you closer to, this is the first step in that process. So, we could make it about her. To me, she is a symptom, maybe the biggest symptom. And now you can start to focus on the fix. You know, part of it, I agree with you guys, is changing leadership from, at multiple levels. But then as you move forward with this accountability, addressing the culture that allowed this to persist. I don't think that we are dealing with bad people necessarily, some of them anyway, but they damn sure lack a lot of perspective. And hopefully this helps bring some of it to the folks that didn't have it.
I mean, Ferguson's a terrible person. Like, this wasn't the only crazy statement he made about this case. Back in March, he called the lawyers representing these women
ambulance chasers. Yeah, I know. He's
a terrible person.
Buffoonery this is not the first example of it. You are absolutely right. I guess I was speaking specifically at I don't think Tom Izzo is a bad person.
Okay.
I think he lacks perspective on this.
Well, thank you.
You know, coming out and supporting the president. First of all, you know, even if it was just a self-preservation, a moment of self-preservation, you don't do that at the moment when he did it. But there, it was never going to be advantageous for Michigan State to keep her as president. It was never going to be a tenable scenario for her to go on in a leadership position. There was no rationale, no reason that she could give that would explain away the failure in leadership there. She was going to have to go. And so to suggest that she should be retained was ridiculous from the start. She never could be retained. So anyone that suggested that lacked or lacks perspective.
Has anyone made an appropriate statement about this whole situation from Michigan State?
I mean, not from someone in power. Like, there have been some people in the media who've said something.
There have been some trustees that have...
There's one guy, Mitch Lyons, who's the one who outed Austin Roberts as a sexual accuser. So, like, congratulations, buddy, but you were already on the way out and trying to save a little face. Like, I give him a little credit, but if that's your adult in the room, come on. Like, it's I mean... I think it goes a lot deeper than Anna Lou Simon, and I don't have a lot of hope that whatever happens here is going to ferret it out and actually change the culture there in a meaningful and positive way.
I think
what might change the culture is the fact that they're probably facing, or the state is facing, I don't know, $500 million to $1 billion in damages here.
So who pays that, Craig? We kind of got into this with Mark a few days. Mark from Lansing a few days ago. He suggested this is an insurance thing for Michigan State, because that was one of my questions. Would this hit taxpayers? Would this hit the student body? Like, who foots the bill for their failures on this?
Well, it won't be Anna Lou Simon. Which is a major problem with American society, is you can screw up, but the liability goes to the corporation. And after some point, like, say, $1 million in net worth, that can't happen. Like, Anna Lou Simon should be personally responsible financially for her actions.
Or inaction.
Well, but she couldn't cover 1% of that with her finances.
I know,
whatever she can contribute.
Whatever she can chip in, I will appreciate it.
Yeah, so I don't know how the payouts, you know, how the judgments or settlements, you know, what the sources will be. Again, you know, Mark from Lansing suggested that it would be an insurance deal, but, you know, can the insurance company argue that, should we really have to pay this for, you know, the clear, you know, impropriety on your part?
I'm sure they're going to argue that.
So, anyway.
If I was the insurance company, I would just to stick it to some people.
I hear you. All right, we will lighten the mood. We will get to something more trivial, something trivial,
like
by
anything
comparison,
else,
right?
Like anything else,
and get to some college basketball. Big game on the horizon for the Maize and Blue taking on Purdue. We'll look back at the Nebraska game and Rutgers. Get some of your calls in as well at 734-998-1050. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. You looking for Michigan apparel? I mean, the Michigan women's basketball team is on a roll, off to the best start in program history. Michigan men's team, big game tonight. You know, the Nebraska game notwithstanding, I think, you know, they have been impressive, more impressive than many of us are expecting. You get your basketball gear, jerseys, tees, you know, whatever Michigan apparel you're looking for at the MDN. Of course, the superstore is located at 303 South State Street right here in Ann Arbor. The MDN is local for everyone, online at MDN.com if you're looking to step things up a level. Your Michigan apparel anyway. You can go next door to the superstore to the Victor's Collection on State Street. Brooks Brothers, Cutter and Buck, Nike Golf. They can take care of you over at the Victor's Collection, the MDN, and the Victor's Collection, the official outfitters of Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, the ticket. Guys, before we go to the phones, I just want to get your take on the week that was in Michigan basketball. Obviously, they dropped one at Nebraska. It was You know, that they got handled. You know, Nebraska blew Michigan's offense up. They did not. Their first option was taken away. You know, almost every time down the floor, Michigan didn't have a counter. Mo Wagner only got five shots in that game. They could not get him any touches. And the Wolverines got blown out, but they responded against a grimy, grimy Rutgers team, you know, to bounce back leading into Purdue tonight.
They're a grimy Rutgers team.
They might not be the worst team in the Big Ten.
I can't imagine that there's someone worse than them. Like
Iowa, Illinois. I mean, they're all competing down there.
Rutgers is 30 or 40 spots worse than most of those teams in KenPom. So, and my God, did they look like it? They had one assist, and that was like not a surprise. Wow. But the Nebraska game, I think, is the more relevant one going forward. We saw a lot of switches where they switched 1-5 so that Wagner, they took away Michigan's pick and roll. Like Purdue did. But Michigan was comfortable rising up in front of Isaac Haas because Isaac Haas was not Isaiah Roby. Roby's much smaller, much quicker, much more able to contest out there. So that was – he was able to take that easy pull-up three away.
Yeah, and they couldn't blow by him either.
Yeah, in part because Michigan doesn't have a Derek Walton real rise-up unassisted three shooter on the team. Maybe Jordan Poole, but obviously Jordan Poole is going to need another year of seasoning before he can be anything approximating a go-to guy. And then they couldn't feed the post. And when they tried to take it in, Nebraska did a really good job of raking. I thought that, you know, most of those turnovers weren't even close to fouls. They were just Nebraska doing a really good job. And it's a wake-up call. Michigan's got to really figure out what to do when people put a point guard on Mo Wagner.
Yeah, as much as I'd like to make Craig for the whole tired comment last week, I think just Michigan had a terrible game against Nebraska. I don't think Nebraska is particularly good. I think Michigan just stunk. I think it eliminates all this a little bit of premature talk about Michigan winning the Big Ten. I think this is a good basketball team.
Let's back up. You're a stats guy. The stats say that Nebraska is a pretty good three-point defense team, don't they?
They are.
Yeah, but three-point defense is
let a lot of shots get up, which is a repeatable part of three-point defense. I mean, you know, you go out to Lincoln and you're Kansas and you win by one. Mm-hmm. You know, they're down to Creighton by one at Creighton with 4 minutes left. Like, Nebraska is a couple of buckets away from being a bubble team here. So
they're the fifth team in the Big Ten.
Here's where this is the part where I'll agree with you, Ed. I do not think Michigan responded to adversity well in that game. You know, Nebraska's defense punched Michigan in the mouth. You know, they blew them up. They blew the number one option up every single time down. They really thwarted Michigan's pick and roll. And what I was looking to see, and we talked about this in the break, I was looking to see Michigan run their off-ball stuff. There was a lot of standing around there. And, you know, part of that is, you know, just responding. You got to be able to respond in the moment. This team has been doing that. Much better than they did at the beginning of the season. But I do think a piece of that, at least, was some fatigue. And Beilein spoke to the number of games that they've had to play here recently and the need for his team to get its legs back. He's not one to make excuses. I think there's something to that. I don't think it's only that. I give the credit to Nebraska for, you know, repeating a defense and actually executing it better than Purdue did. And Michigan, hopefully they have a counter because – that damn sure is going to be what Purdue does tonight. They are Purdue. They told you in that last game, they are not, this game is not going to be won or lost by the Isaac Haas, Mo Wagner matchup. That is not going to happen in this game tonight. They're not going to have Isaac Haas trying to defend Mo Wagner.
Well, just let me say a couple of things. So Nebraska is a good 3-point shooting defense in the sense that they've allowed 31% of their opponents to shoot up 31% from 3-point range. We know from studying college basketball that 31% is unlikely to continue. They will, and they actually, you know, in some of my adjusted numbers, defensive efficiency, 2-point field goal percentage, they look a lot like Maryland side of the ball.
What Brian pointed out is limiting attempts, though.
Yeah,
they do that as well.
I will check that when I go home a little bit later. But I think
KenPom.com, you can check it right now.
Beilein mentioned that.
But the point I want to make is that at Maryland, and that was at home, and maybe there was the less of a fatigue factor, they had a lot of good ball offense against Nebraska on the road. They just didn't. It just wasn't their period. And
Defend yourself, Craig.
I don't want to give Nebraska.
Defend yourself.
I'm not giving Nebraska too much credit. What was the one year we thought Nebraska was like this great team? They made a run heading into the tournament. They made it as a 12 seed, and they just stunk.
I'm not saying that Michigan's performance was good, but you know, I thought Nebraska showed.
Yeah, I think
Craig, defend yourself.
Both can be the case. You can have Michigan not play well and Nebraska be better than we thought. I think that's the. I think that's.
I'm going to go against the ladder.
Craig, go ahead, man. You know, the he who thinks fatigue is a non-issue in games.
I think we lost him.
We could have lost Craig. Craig, you there?
No, I'm there. I'm here.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I woke up. You know, I view this both games somewhat differently. First of all, I think Rutgers is actually one of the better defenses in the country. They're number 18 in defensive efficiency on KenPom. That's a really, really good defensive team. They lost to Michigan State in overtime at East Lansing when they played good defense. They pushed Nebraska right last night. If you saw any of that game, they pushed Nebraska right to the edge to a last-second game. And yet it is true that Rutgers plays no offense. They're a terrible offensive team. But they are tough on defense, and I think that was reflected in the Michigan game with them. In that game, incidentally, we ran a ton of ball screens. I counted, 25 to 30 ball screens that we ran in the game, and they were largely ineffective for some reason because our point guard couldn't beat their big guys, and somehow we couldn't get the ball into Mo when he or Teske when he's being checked by a 6-foot guy. I don't know. What Rutgers was doing was hedging with on the weak side and leaving a guy wide open at the three on the weak side away from the ball, and we couldn't get the ball over there. So I viewed the Rutgers game as not a great offensive effort, but maybe not effort is the right word, but not a great offensive game, but against a team that really is talented on defense. In the Nebraska game, it was a different deal. I read a lot about how Nebraska was switching, and indeed they were, except we didn't run any ball screens. We ran a total of three, I think, in the second half. I watched the game later last night.
It wasn't working.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
Because it wasn't working.
Because they had 20 points in the first half.
Yeah, and in the first half, we didn't run much more. So we didn't and when we did run ball screens, we didn't run them with the point guard very often. There couldn't have been more than two or three. And so I'm not sure what we were doing. We were running a lot of back screens, up the yin-yang, but we couldn't seem to free anybody on the back screens. I don't think Nebraska is a great defensive team. I think they're pretty good. I think they were fortunate and that anything they threw up seemed to go in the basket, even some bad shots. But we played a bad offensive game. We played a bad offensive game, I thought, against Maryland. And I think the reality,
not in the second half.
Not in the second half. But I think we scored 20 in the first half. I think the reality is that, and this is what we talked about from the beginning of the season, is that Michigan is a vastly improved defensive team. I think they're in the top 25, and what am I looking at here? In KenPom, 21, and they're a better defensive rebounding team, which I think has stunned many people who've watched this. I mean, Mo is a better defensive rebounder. The team is essentially a better rebounding team on the defensive boards. But we're not a great offensive team. We don't get into great looks on offense, and I think that's largely that ineffective point guard play at times, and I don't think we're a great shooting team.
I don't think we're great.
That's what it comes down to.
I don't think we're a great shooting team. I don't think we're a great offensive team in the John Beilein era, but I think this is a good offensive team. I mean, you have a point guard in Simpson that can get to the basket. You see some of that ball motion, especially in the second half against Maryland, which I'd love to see more, getting open three-point shots, which allowed them to come back at the game. I think this is bad for offensive team for John Beilein, but not necessarily in the grand scheme of things.
Let's go to the phones at 734-998-1050. Go up to Lansing and talk to Dave. Dave, what's up?
Yes, Sam. How you guys doing?
No, good. Great.
Good. I want to digress just a bit. I know we're talking about Michigan basketball, but I got in a little late on your comments regarding the situation in Michigan State. I want to preface my remarks by saying I am 100% go blue, and I don't really revel in the calamitous events that have taken place at Michigan State, especially in the context of these serious, horrible things that have happened to these young women. But I know that on this show, we call for, and we really exterminated, of course, the president, rightfully so, and even Joan Ferguson, which might be rightfully so. My problem is, and I would like you guys, especially you, Sam, to give me some clarification. Can you differentiate the remarks by Tom Izzo, which I think were much more callous, when he suggested that perhaps we have prosecuted and convicted the wrong person? Tom Izzo said he's not a trustee. He is an institutional player. He is the de facto leader of that school. But yeah, I don't hear the same vitriol and the same calls for his head like we're calling for Ferguson. But again, you know, I think it's altogether wrong, but I think we need to be fair and balanced.
Well, two things.
We call it for Joe, we need to call for Tom.
Well, so two things, Dave. Number one, we spent much of a show talking about Tom Izzo's comments earlier this week. And definitely took him to task for them. But there is no question that as bad as his, they're both, let's be clear, they both were bad. They both were insensitive. They both were appalling. But if you read all of what Joel Ferguson suggested that this is not something NCAA should be interested in because this is just women's gymnastics. This is not football. Joel Ferguson, he suggested that you could pacify the victims with payments. Joel Ferguson suggested that this is just a lone wolf guy. And, you know, once you take care of him, you just move on. Just move on as if a 20-year run of predatory behavior could happen without enablers all over the place. Joel Ferguson suggested that the president should be kept on because she raises money and she they were able to revamp the Breslin Center. Forget that you have one of the worst scandal in collegiate athletics, in the history of collegiate athletics, but she raised money. She raised millions of dollars, so she should still be the president. If you think the two things are equal, I don't know what there is that we can discuss. Tom Izzo's comments were bad.
They were ham-handed, though. They were like, but I don't think that the willful intentionality that Ferguson showed is something that Izzo showed.
And adding to the disgusting tone of Ferguson's comments is the fact that he made them after Izzo made his. So you have an example of bungling a public statement before you. And you go out and bungle it worse?
I mean, who lets this guy talk to the
Come
media?
Come on, man. Dave, look, we rake Tom Izzo over the coals, too. But Joel Ferguson deserved to be raked over the coals more. And they both were bad. Make no mistake. But what Joel Ferguson, what he... Anyway, that's enough of that. We need to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. Guys, before we get out of here, I certainly want to get your take on a few noteworthy items. First of all, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention what Ira talked about in the break, the success of the hockey team, Mr. Cook.
Well, I mean, they've won four in a row. They're 12-10-2, and I looked at the pairwise because someone told me to, and Michigan is 15th right now, which is not quite in the tournament because usually there's an upset or two for an auto bid. But they're in it with a shot. And there's a site called College Hockey Rank that will show you what happens down the stretch if your team wins a certain number of games. And Michigan is likely to be safely in the tournament if they go 6-4 down the stretch. Now, you got two games against Notre Dame. You got two games against Ohio State. And those are two of the top five teams in the country this year. So those are big opportunities, and this weekend's series at Ohio State is the biggest they'll have until the Notre Dame series because road games count for a lot more. So huge series this weekend. They've been playing well even without Lockwood. Hughes is kind of turning a corner, becoming more of a responsible actual defenseman instead of just Jack Johnson at 5'9", which was awesome, but I like
– getting Jack Johnson at 5'9"?
He's a 5'9 defenseman, and he's ranked fourth amongst North American skaters for the upcoming draft. So imagine what kind of player that is. Mm-hmm. It's pretty fun. He's just
wildly skilled. And as he kind of realizes what he can and cannot do at this level, he's going to be spectacular. So hopefully he can help drive Michigan down the stretch. You know, they kind of found a third line with the Pastyovs and Jack Becker. So, yeah, unfortunately, games aren't on TV this weekend. You'll have to stream it online. But if you're considering it, I think this is the biggest series of the year for Michigan.
Craig, Ed Warner hired to Michigan's coaching staff. What did you think of that? Or to Michigan's staff. What did you think
actually, of that?
No, he got hired away, though. He's gone.
Ed Warner is gone?
Yeah, he's gone. Vrabel hired him.
When did that happen?
Like yesterday? There's a lot of stuff going on.
Oh, I missed that. I totally missed that. Wow.
Brian, are you absolutely sure about that?
I saw it somewhere that everybody's looking it up right now. Because, I got to fill some dead air as everybody Googles Ed Warner.
I'll fill some dead air. So Ed Warner, remember the Ohio State, the year they won the football, the first college football playoff? They came into the season with a lot of questions on the offensive line. I think they had four new starters. And by the end of the year, that line was making big holes in Alabama's defense. He did a good job then. He clearly did not do a good job later, which got his butt fired and sent to purgatory in Minnesota.
Warner's not on the Titans list of coaches. It's just a rumor. He is not gone at this point.
Brian
Cook.
Are you sure?
Like, I miss this man.
Say something about Michigan football, I usually automatically bring truth. But
there's talk that he is
going to get hired.
That he is a candidate. Is talk that he is a candidate, but seen nothing to say that says that he has been offered or that he's accepted the job.
Yeah, I think it's uncertain if Warner is going to be a coach at Michigan or not. I mean, I think he may be. It isn't clear to me that he's taken a job at Tennessee either. I actually followed this yesterday, and it seems unclear what Warner's status is. I like it. I like the hire, if it is a hire.
He's been hired to Michigan. There's no doubt about that.
Okay. Well, it isn't clear to me he's going to stay because there's some noise that he will or may have taken a job in Tennessee, but I don't think it's certain yet. I think it's uncertain.
I could see if they offer him a surefire, on-field position, I could see him taking that because that is not what is presently at play here. But even if it winds up being, staying in an analyst position, I still believe he will have a huge impact when it comes to evaluation, when it comes to development strategy, best practices. There, he could still impact things significantly, because you listen to the Ohio State, the Ohio State folks. There seems to be a consensus about what caliber of offensive line coach he was, where their criticisms come in.
He's not an OC.
And they think he's not a good recruiter. They really rail on his recruiting ability as well. I mean, I don't know. I'm just telling you what they say.
How would you tell if you're Ohio State? Like,
right. I hear you. I'm just telling you what they said. And to speak up for him a bit, Bill Green, who covers the state of Ohio and who has covered Ohio State for years as part of those duties, said he feels like the fans were a little bit too hard on both his coordinating skills and his recruiting ability. But, I think it's worthy of note that even the fans that are critical of those things, they are effusive in their praise of his coaching ability when it comes to the line. So, I think there's some value. Some extreme value for Michigan, even if he just winds up being an analyst, which, unless someone moves on, unless you see, someone in there on their offensive staff move on, that's what he'll be. So time will tell, of course. Craig, you're enjoying yourself out there in Hawaii, man.
Yeah, it's great. Man, it's great getting some tennis in and writing a book with Seth, I hope, here, starting to put another book together. So it's a good time.
Maybe you'll actually promote this one, Craig.
He will not.
As opposed to de-promote. But Seth might. So that's his brilliant idea, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, that'll do it for us, folks. It's been another great roundtable. Look forward to him every week.
Who's got it better than us?
No!